Welcome to The Millionaire's Lawyer, where you'll hear leading professionals share expert advice on how to grow your business and sell it for maximum profitability. If you want to learn lawyer-proven strategies for building and exiting your business, then this is the podcast for you. Your host, J.P. McAvoy, is a business lawyer, college professor, and best-selling author who has been assisting clients start, grow, and sell their businesses for millions of dollars for over 15 years. Will yours be the next? Now here's your host, J.P. McAvoy.
Hello and welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us here today. We are happy to have you. I'd like to begin by thanking our sponsor, Conduct Law, a business law firm. Thank you for all the support and assistance you provide to the podcast, Conduct Law. We got a great show for you today. In fact, we've got a guest on who also provides support and assistance to Conduct Law and The Millionaire's Lawyer, Colin Browning. He is the founder and managing partner of Browning IT, which is a hardware software network solution provider to a roster of corporate clients. Colin's firm provides what he calls peace of mind. They offer full service IT support to more than 300 clients of all sizes right across Canada. Colin has worked abroad. He's worked throughout the United States and Canada. And in our conversation today, he talks about why he limits the business of the firm to Canada now for both technological and, other reasons that we'll get into through the show. Thanks for joining us. I look forward to sharing our conversation with you. And now, without further ado, here's Colin and the conversation we had earlier today. Happy to be here today with Colin Browning. It's been some time we've been talking about having this chat. We finally managed to get it organized. Colin, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for being here today.
No problem, JP. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see us on this side. Now, obviously some history. We go back fair ways here. And from a business perspective, we talk regularly because you are providing IT and support to Conduct Law and The Millionaire's Lawyer, and actually have been doing Conduct Law and The Millionaire's Lawyer each since inception. So tell the audience, how wonderful is it to work with both of those businesses and the owner of those businesses?
A little bit of self-congratulation there, but it's pretty fantastic if I say so myself. We've been friends, I think, going back 10 years now before we even started the current firms and projects that you have.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good time. I always enjoy the chat. I always enjoy a good rant, which is probably how we became fast friends, is one of my famous rants, talking about humanity, technology, people, business, and what goes well and what does not go well when you're trying to be a business owner on many fronts.
Yeah, exactly. That's well said, because that's one of the big reasons I knew we'd have some fun and wanted to get you on the show, because we do get going, as you say, some of your rants when things either have worked or have not worked well, and some of the reasoning or reasons for that. Very interesting to have those types of conversations with a techie, with a guy with the tech knowledge, and to see someone that is also a business person, right? And applies some of those learnings to not only your own business, but those that you assist as well. What would be some of the things that, you know, from your tech seat? We'll get you to rant on a few other themes later on, but from your tech seat, you know, where you sit as you're looking at businesses, what are some of the major failings that you see, businesses as you come in for the first time? We've talked about this, in fact, I've sent you in to some of what have become common clients that I knew needed to tech support or tech help. When you go in and do what you call a tech audit, what are some of the first things that you see, or the failings that you see businesses on a regular basis that you'd care to share with the audience here today?
What a beautifully targeted question, as we we share so many of these businesses together and just mutually recommending each other. The number one thing that I pick up on when I am meeting a new client is everyone typically hasn't ever invested in their technological setup, because they believe that their business has run itself without the form of technology up until that point.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest driver, which I'll expand upon in a minute. The next one is people are completely unaware of who has control of their critical technological accounts, be it in a digital space where it's just logging in and finding it, or in a physical space of having an actual record of being able to get to that digital space. And the last thing is understanding backups and critical infrastructure in a disaster recovery plan. So I hate some of those often government overused terms, but a disaster recovery plan is, to boil it down, did you back it up and did you check your backup? Which you don't need to neurotically do it every single day, because no one has time for that. You'll never grow, change, or become a better business if you're going over those fine details every single time. Eventually, once you get to a big enough position with your company, hopefully with the work of people like you, you'll have people that it is their full-time job to do that. But the reality is, as people are starting off, you need to check on it once in a while, give yourself a calendar reminder to do it, and then move on from there. But I don't know if you would like me to go and expand on my first 2 points right off the bat or switch to a different one.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think we'll circle back to those. As you say, it's really instilling some form of discipline, right? And we've talked about this, and we talked about this for mutual clients or those that actually haven't taken the advice, where they don't have the discipline. Maybe they don't even have an understanding of what they require. And then from there, the follow-up discipline to make sure they're checking it. Something as simple as a backup, right? As you say, making sure that actually happened. Interesting, you and I were chatting today, and we were looking at, I think, conduct law, right? And you were citing that, you know, you were checking the backups for the last week to 10 days, I think you said. And you noted actually that one of the backups, there was a hiccup or an issue with one of the days, but that was one day in the last 10 where there was even just a hiccup. So some kind of form of, you know, checking back to make sure that things are being backed up for the, you know, in the event that whatever the tragedy that does occur, because it does happen. And you mentioned disaster recovery. You've gone in and had to repair or try to repair companies as things have come undone, right? You want to talk about that or tell us what that involves? Because I know from our conversations, an ounce of prevention is, you know, that proverbial pound of cure, because to go back and try and find it after the fact is a huge process, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be a monstrous challenge if everything was neglected. So the way that I usually design setups is there's 7 layers of redundancy. I've been through disasters with customers where they call me standing outside the building and it is literally on fire. There was a business here in the city 2 years ago, 2017. It's 2020 now, but you wouldn't know it because we don't look at the calendar anymore. The days of the week don't matter during the COVID crisis.
Right. That's right.
So yeah, it was 2018. Their building burned to the ground because they do kind of construction. They did repairs of stairways and replacements and things like that. Yeah, they called me 11 o'clock and said, what do we do? We can't go in and recover our equipment. It's all on fire. And I asked them, do you have the backup drive in your purse? Because their system was rotate drives. It's the most responsible, reliable way to do it. You can do stuff over the internet, but it makes it tempting to, without that tactile feedback, people often forget to go and check it.
Yeah.
And then further, if your internet connection is slow, because we are in Canada, internet up here sucks. So it's a different context if you're listening to this internationally. It can be really difficult to back up an entire company in a 48-hour window over a weekend. So I asked them, do you have the backup in your purse? They said, yes. I said, go plug it in at your computer at home. You're good to go. You have your entire company on that encrypted USB drive. Within, I think it was about 36 hours, I had them back up online running with a bunch of equipment that I loaned them, running out of their house. So when you're thinking about and considering all this stuff, some attention is good. And to more to your point about seeing a failed backup, you never panic. If you see 20% of your backups fail when you're a smaller organization, that's an acceptable trade for the cost that you invest into your IT. And the reason is you'll have differential backups, weekly full cut backups, and depending on what tool that you choose to use. And when you take a peek at it, a failed backup, most of the time, usually just means it skipped a file or some group of files and it wasn't a complete failure. It just goes and reports as a failure because it didn't get 100%.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what we talked about earlier. So good to know and good for people to hear that way. Of course, it's the questions you're asking of IT or, you know, the people that are looking into those type of things for you. What about security otherwise? So, I mean, you have the burning building, but it's probably more common. And I know this is another theme that we talk about regularly. It's people trying to hack or trying to get in. A great thing to talk about. People are always wondering what the extent of their cybersecurity looks like. What are the threats as you see them? How do you protect from them? What do you tell people?
I tell people in most scenarios that they're not that interesting. When it comes to cybersecurity threats, everyone's going and trying to take advantage so that they can earn a buck. It's pretty unlikely that anybody you talk to on a day-to-day basis or even listening to this podcast has anything that international groups or government organizations wants to purposely go and penetrate to steal that information. Most of what is occurring on the internet and in these hacking or phishing type scenarios is people trying to access resources. Resources come in a couple of different flavors, as we all know. But when you're in the cyberspace, you're talking about people's identities, their credit leverage, their cash position, and their computing resources. So if you have a server farm or a whole bunch of high-end graphics cards, people will be very interested in penetrating your network so that they can abuse those resources to mine Bitcoin. In other scenarios, if you're a wealthy person and they get access to your credit card, they'll burn your credit card in a couple of seconds by going and buying things all over the internet, shipping it all internationally to, you know, weird drop-off locations, and they win $50,000, right? So most people, I advise them to be as secure as you can afford, invest heavily in user training, relying on third-party antivirus utilities these days. I have not seen any value to that anymore. And using online password managers is probably number one. I harass people on a daily basis to the point of ad nauseum, and I'm frankly just tired of saying it. There's a dozen tools out there that do password synchronization, and they allow you to, you know, be the human in the scenario. You only have to remember one password for the rest of your life, and you don't even tell your wife. It manages all your other passwords for you, and you don't have to know what they are whatsoever. You just let that tool go and manage everything for you. It fills it in on a website for you. If you have to type it in, you can bring it up on your phone, use the biometrics on your cell phone to unlock the database, and you painstakingly type it in on somebody else's computer for a short while, and you're in. You can go and run what you need to run.
Yeah, and that's all you need. It's interesting. We had Sandra Estock, or we did an interview with Sandra Estock, who's an identity theft specialist, or I guess the opposite of that is she's helping protect people from identity theft because she actually faced it herself. She was talking about how she was on a plane. I think she's from Venezuela, flying from Venezuela to the States. She got hauled off the plane because someone had stolen her ID and thought that she was human trafficking in China. So somebody had actually taken her ID and began to use it. Similar to what you're describing here is people try to just steal things that they can use or leverage for what they perceive or what will become valuable for them. That's really the biggest threat. You know, it's from what I understand, it's not as much people hacking or taking over the businesses. But when that happens, and you and I have chatted offline about this as well, and even in terms of protecting our common businesses, if there is a hijack, I won't put the words in your mouth. We've talked about a solution for a hijack if it ever occurred to one of our clients. What is the way that you're set up to respond to a hijack, and how do you suggest people respond to those if they're set up properly?
If they're set up properly, you have adequate documentation. You have as much dual authentication as you can. So I guess to expand on the first point before moving to the second, adequate documentation means that...
Actually, you know what, Colin, let me interrupt you because can you... go back to adequate documentation, but maybe describe when I'm saying hijack for those listening, I may have jumped the queue a little bit here. Describe what I mean by that hijacking or, you know, an organization being hijacked. And then, of course, getting into the response or reaction to it as you were just about to do.
So as best I can to understand your term for hijack, I think you mean when somebody is phishing an organization and they're actively trying to steal accounts within that organization and move money around. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the actual lockdown. That first, yes, instance, but then also where they, you know, they've actually locked it down and said, you got to pay us a ransom.
Oh, in ransomware. Yeah, that's super fun. So
only a tech guy says that's super fun, by the way.
Yeah, because I don't care. You could throw ransomware exactly on any of my client computers or any of my personal computers, and I would just blink slowly a couple of times and go, got me. And then basically just hit the delete button. I accept the loss of a couple hours of my time and restore from backup. So there's no effective stoppage to modern viruses whatsoever. It's impossible. And so I've been through the ransomware scenario once, and it pushed my company over the edge of refraining from third-party antivirus and starting to focus so heavily on user education, best practices, modern firewalls, and more into the analytics side of things where reports come in and bounce in and start to notice patterns. And those patterns drive different emails, phone calls, and text messages to myself and the team.
Was this you that was hit or was this a client that was hit?
So you've seen it was a client.
You've seen it once before though. You've actually seen it. Yeah, well, just describe it for people that might be listening.
Yeah, in real time. No, it's hilarious. It's a super interesting thing. And I pity and have empathy for everybody who didn't have an adequate plan. Don't let me get that away from you. But the technological aspect and where Eternal Blue flaws came in, where ransomware really started. If you want to have a fun Googleable term, look up NSA, Edward Snowden, and Eternal Blue. You'll have at least 8 hours of reading ahead of you on encryption and Windows flaws. But the scenario was, and this will probably take about 5 minutes to tell the story, so feel free to chop it up.
Yeah, give us the choppy version because 5 minutes and people fall asleep at the wheel here.
It was super fun though. So we're talking about a firm of 25 to 30 people. There was a recent hire who I've been managing this firm for almost 10 years at the time of this occurrence, both at my previous job and they onboarded as a client when I started my own company. This gentleman just joined the firm within the last year. He was older and did not have a solid grasp of technology at the best of times, but after creating this problem, really jumped on board in taking some self steps towards educating himself on how this stuff worked. So I got a call from the customer midday, probably 11 a.m., saying, "Colin, all of these files in these folders, they won't open. Like Microsoft Word documents, they won't open." So I'm sitting there thinking that someone's default application for opening a file got changed. And then they started to tell me, everyone's noticing this problem. And so I said, okay, what client file folders? They tell me the client file folder, and it happened to be in the letter D's. And so then I said, well, can you go and open up something in the letter S and tell me if it opens? And they said, yes. And I'm like, okay, now go back to the letter A and tell me what happens. They said, same problem that we called you about. And I had to advise them to go and pull the power cables out of the server.
As soon as they could, because it was running through, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So this particular encryption bot, and I was aware of what it would do, and I figured it out pretty quickly because it was in the news a lot, and I do a lot of reading on IT security. It was going alphabetically, and it was pumping out through the victimized lawyer's laptop. So he actually got this on his computer at home, but was too scared to call IT and advise that he was seeing weird pop-ups on his computer demanding money and all that stuff. So on Monday morning, he came into the office, plugged his laptop into the network, and his permission set allowed him to see different folders.
Yeah, got it all going and introduced into the inboard environment. Yeah, exactly.
So it started hammering out, and it went through the public share that he had access to and started encrypting things in alphabetical order. And, you know, my little stunt of going back and forth between the letters told me what permissions the person had. And then I also compared, well, to get back to the elapsed time scenario instead of ranting about that. So by 11 o'clock, I got that call. 11:30, I was on site and I dragged everybody into the boardroom to go and query when people arrived that morning to figure out which machine it was. Because my next step, knowing that my backups were going to be okay either from that day or the day before, because of acceptable loss and some of the backups not being perfect, was how fast can I get them online by removing the problem and restoring from backup?
Yep.
So the answer was they were out of business for 6.5 hours and they lost 2 hours of time that morning doing real work from 9 to 11.
Because I'm hearing some people, they didn't actually pay out, you know, the ransom, and or they weren't required to do that, as you say. They just...
No, 99% of the time paying the ransom doesn't get you anywhere.
What percent? I'd heard that some people are saying it actually is a business decision sometimes where they say if they don't have a proper backup and they realize they're hooped, they'll just say, okay, whatever it is. Because I think they charge, usually it's like sort of the $35,000 or $50,000 range, I think is what the ransoms end up being.
Sure. So this is my best understanding of the things that I read at the time, is that most of these encryption key systems were broken. So they would go and encrypt the data and the encryption key would not get sent back to the person who was encrypting the data. It was basically just doing damage with the intent of taking somebody's money.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So there
are
different ones. I guess some of them are, I mean, if you can.
Some of them were effective.
Some of them are more ethical, right? Because I know they want to get paid. So they're almost trustworthy, you know, hijackers, if you will, if you want to call it that. But yeah, it's just interesting. It's just one of many threats, right? And as we talk about the different threats, that's one of them. The biggest one is probably... it's probably users, as you say, user own error. So making sure that you've educated people the right way from there.
That is the single most important thing to consider when dealing with technology, security, physical security, any of those aspects, is the weakest point in the chain is the person every single time.
Yes, that's humanity. And, you know, if I want to get you on a rant, I just have to talk a little bit about, you know, trust for humanity or their future of humanity for that. And so let's shift gears a little bit. I mean, as we talk about obviously IT security and being set up the right way, but what does the future look like for business, I guess, and I guess your type of business as we, you know, come out of this, even the COVID-19, where we are now, what does the future of business look like from your perspective as we move more and more virtual? I mean, I think it's really, and we've had a couple of shows here that we've had guests talk about how it's really accelerated the pace at which we are moving to an online or virtual environment for work and for all things, really. What do you see the future from your perspective? What are some of the challenges? And what do things look like in 5 years from now in terms of the way we use technology to interact on both a business and personal front?
It's a super broad stroke question that I'm not sure that anyone has the answer for. I can tell you that in Canada, it's going to be wildly different than somewhere like South Korea, mostly because of infrastructure. So my view on this is people are going to learn a lot more as a result of this crisis about technology and how to interact with it, which will be a net positive because people will end up with more free time. I think people will spend a lot less time doing shopping and spending money on frivolous things and a lot more time focusing on personal development and focusing on reducing how much work they actually need to commit to in a day and becoming more efficient at it. So technology has a big leverage point in there. So a 30-second video conference meeting, no brand affiliation there.
That's right.
As we use the giant Z thing that would drive an IT security person nuts.
Well, actually, let's take a second there because we're using Zoom right now, obviously, to do this. And we've talked offline about that as well. They're going to do some fixing, but do you think that Zoom continues to be sort of a leader and sort of where people go to for this, or is somebody going to leapfrog them?
Zoom is dominating the market. I mean, just like I was talking about password management utilities, there's a dozen other video conferencing platforms. Zoom is both popular and slick. They made it really fast, and they made it really fast by making it reasonably insecure. And they've realized now that a large number of their user group thought it was secure because of the language they used to advertise it. And they've been doing the right thing, and they're investing really heavily into trying to fix it. The cost at that is going to be a loss of features when you turn on the security features.
Right. Yeah, it's only natural.
So to rephrase that, you'll lose video conferencing features and speed in negotiation of security because it takes CPU horsepower to encrypt things. It takes bandwidth to encrypt data. And it's just a matter of math. Most people don't have high-end computers like we do. They would notice an impact you won't be able to do a 3,000-person end-to-end encrypted meeting unless they suddenly create 10 times the amount of servers that they have because you're encrypting that traffic over the wire and on the fly. That's really hard to do. There's super cool tools like Nextcloud that have that all built in. It's self-hosted. So if you really want to go and create a private economy server network amongst your group, you can go into it for free with open source tools. You could pay for other tools. You can use other long-standing applications like Signal on your cell phone, which encrypts text messages and other types of mediums. But yeah, going back to your main point after the tangent about Zoom, the world's going to change. The outlook is currently not good. And it's going to be a big shift for a lot of people to realize that perhaps their roles can be replaced by modern tools, which is something that I've watched continue throughout my career. And my opinion is my job's going to go away eventually and be replaced by either AI or air quotes AI, however you want to define that, because most of these tools and stuff that I interact with, they run themselves. I have to do human problem solving most of the time. It's people interacting with technology is truly what my job is in problem solving. It's taking a look at the data set and figuring out where a human made a mistake because the robots know how to talk to each other.
Hello, podcast friend. I hope you're enjoying this episode of the show. We sure appreciate having you here. I'd like to take a minute to invite you to download a free digital copy of my best-selling book, The Millionaire's Lawyer, Grow and Sell Your Business. It's available for download at jpmcavoy.com. That's jpmcavoy.com. Hope you enjoy the book. And thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Now back to the show. So it's interesting to say even your job, I think the expertise is going to be required, but to the extent there are things that can be automated, as you say, those types of jobs will be replaced or supplanted by technology. Let's see if we can get you to rant on AI. Such an interesting topic, right? And a number of our guests have also opined on that. I mean, are you fearful of AI? What do you think will occur? Is there a nebulous AI that's being developed right now that's going to overrun us?
Well, we'd either have to ask Facebook, Google, or China about that question.
They're listening right now. So, that perhaps if they feel like, what do they call it? Zoom bombing this particular session, they can give us an answer. While we wait for them to do that, why don't you give us your thoughts?
I think that right now AI is quite far ahead in the future unless someone has a breakthrough in computing power. There is so many interesting topics that you can go and run down the avenues on and talk about. There's all kinds of famous people who are incredibly fearful of it. I think that giving power over to computing resources will be a net benefit to humanity as a whole because people won't have to spend as much time working on nuance and they'll be a lot freer to go and do the simple things that we evolved into in the first place. For the most part, people find more joy in petting their dog, raising their kids, going outside and playing in the garden and going for a walk than they ever do sitting in front of a screen, notwithstanding the computer engineers, software engineers, and people, nerds like me, that can derive some pleasure out of that. It is not the predominant source of happiness for most people.
It's interesting. So you're thinking people are going to actually spend less time in front of the computer, in front of the screen, as opposed to more, because I think correct. A lot of people would disagree with you. I think a lot of people would say that we're actually becoming a society that is, if nothing, fixed on, you know, on a computer. And the reason why kids are spending so much time right now, it's impossible to get them off it. And we're really grooming them for a time where they're going to be on computers 24/7 anyways.
No, I completely disagree. Kids are addicted to the technology that we have today in a very specific circumstance, which you could relate to very closely to gambling, which I'll get back onto. But the reality is we're already, quote unquote, part of an AI collective right now. We all have at our fingertips a group of technological devices that uses neural nets to go and self-learn, and they answer all of our questions anyways. And if you hear the sonar ping, that is the nerd feature of my phone that I forgot to mute before an interview.
Yeah, we've noted it three times, by the way. I was going to actually run an offline count here and run a contest for the listeners, but that's fine. You can leave it pinging if you wish, or you can turn it off. We'll
leave it pinging and we'll see how many people reply with a number obscurely. So getting back to it, every time you ask Amazon or Alexa, I should say, or Google a question, there's a neural net powering that. So we're really already part of an AI collective that we just don't understand right now based off of devices that are already in our home. So when we say that has the symbiosis or whatever term you want to throw at that already begun, it's already here. We're already a part of it.
Do we need to be scared about that? That's interesting. Do we need to be scared about Google listening or Amazon listening at all times?
To a point. But right now I see no physical threat to people's well-being in modern and forward-thinking countries. There's some places around the world where it's a really bad thing to be listening to somebody all the time. But for fear of getting into a political rant on that aspect of it, where you can use it as an evil weapon, there's more good to be had with every tool that humanity has developed than there is a negative, period. So when you, like, if you take a look at the space program and NASA, just that technological advancement was probably the most dramatic change that humanity's ever seen, is the technologies that came out of what NASA created, just in trying to chase down a rocket to the moon to send people to say that we beat the Ruskies. Mm-hmm. It's the most ridiculous waste of money to send people spinning around another object in our solar system, but we created the most cool technology out of it, period. Back to the kid part of the technology thing, I think that's much more of a gambling aspect, because we have these tiny screens and we don't really know how to interact with technology because it's been around for such a short amount of time. The iPhone, which really shook up the game, and mobile tablets and having them readily accessible, came out 2007. So we've had 13 years of trying to raise our children around these devices. And the number one driver on this of people interacting with technology is make money. So when you are using your parents' credit card tied to a mobile device that has infinite access, you go for the gambling approach, which is create systems, patterns, and interactivity between the user and the device to keep them with the most amount of screen time and maximize the profit, which is exactly what gambling has always been.
Right. Yes. Doing. Yeah. Analogous in that sense, and having, like, yeah, pushing through and getting even the small purchases along the way, or feeding the purchases along the way.
Exactly. And they do it through gaming, bright lights, sounds, yeah, and patterns, right? All things that humans love to recognize, interact with, and, you know, they derive pleasure from it.
That's pretty interesting. Now, I want to go back to something that you did say before as well. You know, people listening to this, last I checked, 52 different countries around the world, people have tuned into the show. I don't know why in some of the countries they are listening, but they certainly are. And for those that are in Estonia and Taiwan and New Zealand and Australia, hey, how you doing? Great to hear you. It's interesting to hear you say that the internet sucks in Canada. I jotted that down as soon as you said that. I figured that'd be a good thing to come back to. Why, in your opinion, Colin Browning, does the internet suck in Canada?
This could quickly turn into a very dark rant, but the overarch of this is mismanagement, and from the government side and from monopoly. So in the States, monopolies are illegal. Up in Canada, monopolies are kind of illegal. And what Canada did is, there's three big vendors in the second biggest country on the planet that basically all agree to a triopoly. I'm not sure if that's the proper
oligopoly
term for it.
Yeah, it'd be an oligopoly.
It's an oligopoly. All right. Because yeah, I knew duopoly was the next one. But yeah, it's a complete mess. We have three significant vendors here in the country that either bought other companies or have historically owned the lines, aka Ma Bell. And they lobby the government. They bully every other small company that tries to get into the industry. And they have, since the 60s, not invested into technology or infrastructure in this country, period. They consistently use tax loopholes to benefit their board of directors. and they refuse to go and solve what we could now call a public infrastructure problem by overselling and oversaturating an already broken platform, to which I've already been volunteering my time for some of these organizations just to keep people in business, even understanding that I disagree with their principles.
Is 5G not going to resolve a lot of this, though? Because the investment is is going to occur with 5G.
No, 5G is worthless over a significant distance, and Canada is the second biggest country on the planet. So it takes more money to roll out 5G, a complete fleet of new devices to even interact with it, right? So it's a two-way street. So when a new Wi-Fi technology comes out, it's the exact same thing in concept as 5G. New Wi-Fi technology comes out, it's great that your home router broadcasts it. All of your devices you've had for the last 10 years, don't talk to it, right? Mm-hmm. They talk on the old protocol. Now, it's great that the 5G towers will also support the last two old protocols. To the best of my knowledge, they'll support 3G and 4G, but they'll focus their energy output on doing 5G technology, or they'll be mated to towers that already push out 3G and 4G signals so that historical devices can still connect. So think about pagers that worked on 2G technology. They only got phased out in the last 12 months because that finally got shut down. So no, 5G is not the solution for Canada. We have awful internet because of, again, to reiterate, mismanagement of the government, lobbying of the government, and having a board of directors run what should be now considered a public service, much like roadways.
It's a public utility. It ought to be considered a public utility.
Public utility, apologies. That's right, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah, and
it's quite ridiculous because here the average connection speed in Canada is rated in the bottom 10 of the planet.
And what do we pay for it? And we probably pay in the top, well, we do pay in the top 10%, don't we?
We are the most expensive internet on the planet, period. And we are in the bottom 10% of performance.
Well, like they say, you get what you pay for, right? Oh, wait, no, that doesn't exactly work in this situation, does it?
Not at all. So when you want to get into the rant about it, I have a server in Sweden that I run out of a friend of mine's apartment. And their internet connection cost me 30 euros. It is gigabit service. So that means 1,000 megabits per second up and down. At my physical office, where one of my businesses runs out of, to get that same service is $2,800 Canadian dollars a month. I refuse to pay for it because at my house, not even 600 meters away from where my business is, I have a half a gigabit service and I pay $130 a month for that.
Yeah, it just goes to it speaks to how the system's broken, right? Or how they've managed to manage it. What's the for the building that I've got just outside of Ottawa? I know you've had a look at that. What's the speed at that one, which is actually connected, but we haven't.
Oh, that's
you call looking at that.
Yeah, you're in a strange scenario there because government used to be there. So government will pony up whatever it costs through third parties like Allstream. So technically, there is 10 gigabit service available there, but paying for it is more than what you would get for selling your kidney.
That's right. There's no business case. I think we've looked at it and there wasn't a business case for getting it running, but
exactly,
it's nice that it's wired to it in any event. At some point there may be something. Well, let's talk business for a few minutes here because we could go all day with this. And as I say, I like to poke you to see if I can get you ranting on one of these themes. We met earlier as I was a partner at another law firm, as you say, and spun out and you were integral for the growth of Connick Law and now the Millionaire's Lawyer. You've helped grow an awful lot of businesses through your time. And you've done it for yourself personally as well, growing your own business. Principles that you see, first principles for launch of business, those for your own as you've grown yours and you've seen others begin and launch their business outside from technology. What are some things that you would point a business owner to think about, put it on their top 10? We don't need to make a list, but a top list of things for them to consider as they go to launch their business.
First is persistence. You're not going to be able to launch your business without that skill set. So if you find that you pick up a task, stop it, and then put it down, running a business, probably not for you. The most successful business people I know are the most persistent people I know, and I tend to gravitate towards them. They tend to gravitate towards me. They're the pathological workers, which is sometimes a good thing and a bad thing. That is hands down number one. Next thing is know what you're good at and learn to sell yourself on that one thing. So for me, I understood that my job quickly became working with between people and technology, not the actual technology itself, because I can read a book just like everybody else on the internet. So figuring out what I was good at and then focusing on that aspect was key. And then don't go big and don't borrow what you don't have to borrow. Start small, make it profitable, and then grow it if you can, scale it back if you can't. And then use rule number one to go back to the drawing board, which is persistence. It's no secret that I have had ups and downs in whichever company you want to pick on that I manage. And my persistence has not laid off. I continue to still be able to eat in these troubling times. And I continue to go and volunteer my efforts outside of that. But once you go through a couple of steps in running your business, you can't lose sight of what got you there in the first place. And sometimes taking a small step back to go and reanalyze that and focus on it is super important.
Yeah, that's a great answer. As I said, you almost did do a top list of things, and you're right, persistence. I've seen it as well for the business owner that refuses to take no for an answer, right? They know there's a solution if they work hard enough at it. As you say, sometimes they need to take a step back to make sure they're approaching it from the right perspective, but certainly persistence does pay off. You've seen that as well. What would be a lesson that maybe you've learned, a failure perhaps that you've had or seen that would be a learning lesson, as they say, something to learn from?
Oh, learning to hire out to people that do things better than I am good at. Oh, there's a way better way to phrase that. Hiring people who are good at what they do to take away from the task list of things that I am bad at. I struggle with paperwork nonstop. Hiring key players in the company to go and manage my paperwork has been critical. I am awful at it. I am great at creating piles of paper on my desk. It is a constant failing point for over 10 years. I can tell you that I have become rapidly efficient at making that paperwork disappear in fits and spurts, but that does not solve the inherent problem of that's not what I do. So I solve problems, I communicate, I can beat my head against the wall with technological problems, but the big thing there is hire people to do what you don't like to do and what you do poorly. Hire somebody else to do it that loves it, lives it, breathes it, knows it.
Yeah, that's great advice, right? And a common piece of advice from coaches and business-minded people to say, hire the best people you can around you to support you and work persistently to it, and then round out your team to ensure that you can increase the offering.
Yeah, and I guess the next one is to communicate to your peers. So your peers can be your friends, your family, and other business owners. And as if you bounce ideas off of each other like we do, we've been doing it for almost 10 years, we both grown and changed as a result of it, right? And so Some of those little bullet points bounce right off and you forget about it. Other ones are key things that save you a whole world of grief.
That's right.
And if you're constantly talking about both your successes and your failings without, being a sociopath or a robot on either scenario, it's super important because there's good and bad things that happen. And if you don't reflect on either of them, you'll never change and you'll never grow. You'll never continue to develop anything else around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what some of the feedback we received with respect to this podcast as well. People acknowledge that we do this, on air. We think it through and learn from people that have expertise in certain areas and try to share that with those that might be going through similar things. For you, what kind of things inspire you? What inspires you, both work to put the energy in, and when you talk about the volunteering and the other things that you're doing, what's inspiring you to do all that?
Well, I'm going to basically just tap on the mic for an audio cut here. That's super hard to ask a clinically depressed person for 15 years that question. So I don't know if you want to cut this out or put it in. So it's going to be up to you.
Well, this is good stuff. If you're willing to keep this in and keep talking about it, this is the type of stuff that people really find interesting. So, try to answer that honestly. That's a great way to approach it. There's a lot of people listening that go through the same type of thing that you and all others do as well, right? So we all face different challenges. So speak to that for someone that might be listening that experiences something similar to what you experience.
Yeah, for sure. I just want you to know from our friendship aspect and your opportunity to cut it out that like the things that I talk about here are super dark. So what inspires me can be a challenge. And I'm not even entirely sure I know how to answer the question effectively, but I take a look at people who are as thick-headed, persistent, and unmalleable as myself as inspiration. But the constant self-criticism can be crippling when you're doing these types of things and trying to learn your way through both running a business, being a person, trying to be a member of a community, humanity, and all that aspect while you have been both clinically diagnosed with depression and have personally known to live with that demon for more than 15 years. So when you're tracking down inspiration, some of it, or I would encourage you to try and find a path where you can find it from within rather than external resources. So when it comes to external resources, as I was mentioning with those qualities of another person that I'll go and look for in inspiration, I look at someone whom you actually know, and I didn't know this until I think a year ago. Elon Musk has been a personal hero of mine for more than 20 years. because I actually heard about him that long ago. And I've been such a physics, math, science, engineering nerd, went to school for engineering, that I latched onto the way he spoke and other people just like him for a very long time. But you take a look at that individual and they do struggle. They struggle with communication. They struggle with all kinds of the similar mental issues of getting stuck on a tangent. You all of a sudden you look at your clock in the middle of the workday and it says 4 a.m. That happens with people who are both depressed and unskilled, as well as people who are depressed and highly skilled. So that part is tangible on all fronts. And it's just a matter of time spent learning versus time spent trying to earn to in order to function as a human being for heat, hydro, rent, food.
Yeah, in a functional way. Colin, thanks for sharing that. Now, as I say, I think this is really valuable for somebody listening. So what are some of the strategies for dealing with?
Learning to relax, learning to take breaks, learning to focus only on the good interactions that you have. If you consistently have poor interactions, it's not inherently evil or in poor judgment to cast them away. If you find that working with a particular client group or industry doesn't work, cut it out. There's no harm in that. Client retention is not key. For some types of industry, it can help drive success, but for personal development, it's not always useful.
I think that what you're saying as well is true of, I mean, of all people, and it's to think consciously about where things are coming from and attract the right things, the positive things, whether it be clients or any other influence that is going to have the positive impact we're looking for in both our life, our business, whatever we're trying to develop, and try to wean ourselves or try to separate ourselves from the things that aren't productive, right? As you say, I too believe that it makes sense to call yourself of clients, for example. So a business person for clients, what is it? They say the 80-20 rule, right? It's the, and you see this, we talk about this. There's 80% of the clients with all this, the squeaky noise and make all the noise and they taking up all your time and energy, when it's the 20% of your really good clients, the ones that aren't making all the noise and creating all the problems, that are actually your best clients, you know, and oftentimes are the ones that generate the most of the bottom line as well. So get rid of some of those squeaky ones if there's too much of that going on from a business perspective. And then in life otherwise, if there's other things that are doing the same thing life otherwise, try to remove those or call yourself of those things from a life experience. That's just natural selection and doing it in the best possible way. It strikes me as it applies to anybody really. And so you got to step back sometimes and do it thoughtfully and think about where you're going. And the way I will do that is I'll look at stuff from year or 2 year long gaps and decide where things have to be in a year or two from now. Would that be something similar to what you're describing as well? Like, as you say, to look at, you know, that client base and decide sometimes it doesn't make the most sense to service some of these clients?
Yeah. I mean, I probably learned more about this topic from you because I think there is a 20-year age gap between the two of us.
I think it's 40, but that's okay because you're pushing 60 now, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that. I got the gray hair for it, at least.
Yes, of course. Yeah, it's starting to come to the beard there too, I see.
No, it's brutal. Yeah, when it comes down to this, I fear the 80-20 rule makes it sound too cutthroat or without empathy for the people that you're interacting with. And most of the time, when you consider that situation in more detail, it'll just be about communication paths or organizational management. So not every business succeeds. And especially when they start to be the squeaky wheel, often it's from mismanagement, either from the bottom up or top down, however you want to see it. And then other times it's just a matter of some people don't gel together. So if another company in the exact same industry as you hops in there, they communicate better, all of a sudden that company will become wildly successful because of their support. And you'll become more successful yourself by walking away and focusing on communicating with the people that you are already good at.
Yeah.
Not to say that there isn't room for growth on both sides, but the efficiency of it can often be handed off to somebody else. And there's a time limit on how many good working hours we have and how many good working hours we want to have, which mm-hmm. really drives back to that mental conditioning thing of do what makes you happy. If it doesn't make you happy, spend less time at it and find the things that you can do to make you happy.
Yeah, that's good. That's well said. And maybe a good spot to sort of segue into what makes you happy. What do you plan to do? You know, if we revisit this conversation in 2 years, the way I'm doing those sort of chunks, what will have occurred between now and then 2 years from now that we're talking about saying, yeah, this is a good thing that's happened since the time we had that chat back in, what is it? I won't even say the date because we're not sure when this is going to air. But, you know, as we leave the COVID-19 pandemic era, what do things look like in 2 years? The positive things that we're setting out there, intentions to see for the future of your business and life.
Future of my business is I want more automation within the company so that I have to spend less time focusing on tiny tasks and, you know, break fix focus more on driving change and implementing cooler technology for my customers, and personally finding room for international vacations for the first time in 8 years.
Yeah, there you go, right? And so there will be travel again. You're predicting there will be travel. We'll be allowed to leave, I guess they'll open the borders at some point within the next 2 years.
Yeah, and if not, I'll just go and swim it.
Yeah, really.
Because at this point, I think everybody wants to break out of their house. But yeah, taking a little bit more time for me 2 years from now is definitely going to happen, whether it comes from wild success or scaling back and figuring out what's most efficient for what I've created, right? Failure is always an option with business. Not everybody wants to accept that. And it's not ideal, right? But most people who have a successful company start it when they're 40. Not when they're 22.
That's right. And they oftentimes have started several companies over the course of their life until they've learned the lessons or hit on the thing that's actually going to lead it to be a successful company. I tell that to clients all the time.
Exactly.
Starting, it doesn't necessarily going to be successful. Now, working with the right professionals, such as yourself and myself, are certainly going to increase the likelihood of success.
But exactly.
Yeah, as you say, certainly no guarantees to success.
Yeah, but learning to, I mean, if you're an active listener, active reader, active engager in any types of self-help, or just listening to two people who've been doing this for, 10 years, you're going to learn something from them. You're going to implement in your life either willingly or unwittingly. And all of a sudden, things start gravitating towards you that are creating more success. So if you latch onto these things and you understand why some people are interacting with it, even if you go and you, in that scenario, while you're actively listening, go and cast judgment on, say, I bet you they're going to stumble into that trap. Go write it out. Write out why you think that would be something that they would interact with. Ask yourself the question on where you think you learned that lesson before the other person did, and engage with the idea and battle it, right? And then share. Once you think you've created the solution for it, share it in an open discussion and see if you can get why someone ended up where they did, right? We were all tiny little babies figuring out the world at one point. That never goes away.
Yeah, I was going to say some of us still are, right? But I mean, that's a part of the point of this podcast as well, where you explore some of these themes. And I think that, well, I know that people are gaining something from this as they listen and the notes that we receive on that. If someone's heard something today that resonated with them or was interested in learning more, connecting with you, perhaps engaging you and your services with respect to some of the technology needs they might have, what's the best way to reach out and find you and communicate with you, Colin?
I don't want them to.
You got to answer the question.
Best way to find me is by scraping the bottom of the barrel and dealing with other IT companies in this city, because they all contract me, and I go in and I solve their problems most of the time. No, but
you've got clients right across the country though as well, right? Do you any clients internationally? Or because I mean, I see you up in Montreal, I see you down to Toronto as well. You're certainly not.
Yeah, so I support people across Canada. I support networks across Canada. I historically used to work in the States, but I choose not to anymore. I volunteer my time for all kinds of other organizations and friends across the planet, because with video games and technology and things that have held my interest, I meet all kinds of people all around the planet. We're all the same, and we all have the same keyboard, as it turns out. So yeah, it's an interesting world to be involved in technology. Fastest way to find me is usually just going to the website, either Barrieven Tech, which is my community-based company, or Browning IT, which is BROWNINGIT.com. There's all kinds of contact forms there, and they all eventually bounce over to me. But yeah, when it's why you want to engage with me, it comes down to problem solving, efficiency, cost savings, things of that nature. So I manage a scale of people that isn't common in the IT industry, because I focus so heavily on user education and self-help, where I go and I provide the tools and resources to the people interacting with the technology such that they can solve most problems themselves. Not because I don't want to do it for them. I have plenty of customers that want me to handhold, but lots of these people are perfectly capable of telling a device to restart. And when you take those things out of your life, you can scale the number of people that you support and have a bigger impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And it actually, we've talked about that consciously as well. It's also a little bit that 80-20 kind of rule is, if those people are commanding too much of resource, time, energy, effort, whatever it is, they may not be the right ones. It's also not the ones that you necessarily want to service. You will to a certain extent, but as you say, it doesn't always make the most sense. That's great. So obviously wonderful ways to contact you. Great chat today. I knew it would be. I'd like to leave these episodes for the listener, something that they can take with them for the remainder of the day, the remainder of the week, as they've listened to an episode. We hit on some great themes here today, Colin. I appreciate some of the sharing that you did here. And obviously lots of great, wonderful advice. can you, for the purposes of ending this podcast, come up with one? If there's a billboard, if there's a sign or a post-it note, if there's a bumper sticker that Colin is driving around with on his IT, on the side of the IT van, what is it? What do you want people reading? What do you want them to think about as they carry on with their day and the rest of their week?
Let me think about that one for a second and just like give me a hard cut, because I've got like 1,000 jokes.
There's no hard cuts for any of this stuff, dude. This is good stuff. So we'll let this roll right through here because...
Oh, you're brutal. You're torturing me.
I was going to say, you could even make it... I mean, we can put this to be adult rated if you need to answer it very, very frankly. But
no, we'll save that too.
Some of you... Yeah, exactly. Save for episode number 2. But say, I mean, give us something that we can, as I say, take with us. These are the episodes drop once a week. And as I say, I'm hearing from listeners all over the world. They're saying, hey, that was fun. And they like listening in on the conversations is what I'm hearing. And they like that there's a very positive, uplifting feel to the show. And they appreciate that they've got great guests on, people that are sharing things that they're dealing with both in business and in life, and giving strategies, tips, ways of, you know, dealing with any of the myriad of issues that come across people's desks, come across their front doors on a regular basis. And people are saying, yeah, me too, right? Or I'm hearing that same thing as well. And I'm happy to know that someone else has seen it, dealt with it, and has carried on and, you know, will continue to do so. So there you go. I've bought you some time there. So in neon lights flashing, and then give us some context for what you'd say.
Sure. Both in managing technology and your business, be persistent, do the obvious, create lists for yourself so that you can have something tangible to go and strike down. Pass along the tasks that you find boring to somebody else. Find time for you in the day, even if it's a 10-minute little retreat to go outside with your dog. Make sure that at the end of the day, you're giving yourself to the business so that you get something bigger in return.
There you go. That's a great spot to end us here today. Colin, thanks so much for being on the show. Contact details, whether you like it or not, will be in the show notes. So if anybody has heard, is interested in reaching out, certainly feel free to do so. Thanks for being on the show, Colin. We appreciate having you today and look forward to the next time.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to The Millionaire's Lawyer. Please subscribe and rate on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. To get your business millionaire assessed and to access the wide variety of resources that we offer in addition to this podcast, go to jpmcavoy.com. That's jpmcavoy.com.